the sun's going to nova and we're all going to die. And it's just so scary and frightening, and what I just said is all true and not related. The sun will nova someday, it will expand, it will turn the earth into a cinder, and the good news is that most of us will already be dead. So, hallelujah! Don't you feel better already? You know, we have in our society the idea that fear is some bad thing. That fear is unmanly. It's not a good thing to admit that you're afraid. It's better to tough it out, to fool yourself and to fool everybody else. Whistle a happy tune and no one will suspect you're afraid. This is indicative of our society's rejection of the early warning system that is fear. Fear is not a terrible thing. It's nature's way of saying, pay attention. It's not nature's way of saying, ignore me. It's not nature's way of saying, you have nothing really to worry about. And it shouldn't be nature's way of paralyzing us. But our society doesn't really want to deal with fear. We want to feel the frisson. We want to feel the shakes. We have a society that in a sense, conspires to make us afraid beyond the actuarial chances of what's going to get us. We as a society, and men in particular, in one aspect, and women in particular in another aspect, though men are catching up, want to spackle over and fill in all of those things that make us afraid. We're actually only born with one fear, and that's a fear of falling. They tell us that's the only thing that babies are programmed with, maybe fire, but that's still being debated. All of our other fears we learn, and many of them make some sense, and we as a society spend so much time trying to exorcise our fears, trying to banish them as if they were bad things. We don't want to be afraid. We don't want to seem afraid. It's vulnerable. It's weak. And so we take pills to get rid of anxiety. We self-medicate with alcohol and food and all kinds of other substances to fill those holes in ourselves that seem empty and afraid. We are afraid, not unreasonably, of death. That's a big one. Doesn't normally help a lot, but we're afraid of death, and I certainly share some of that fear. But pretending spends an awful lot of our psychic energy in putting up false fronts. And I think it bespeaks something in our society that is afraid to deal with reality. As many of you know, and I often say this on our Sunday when we do the ofrenda for the Day of the Dead, that American society in our Halloween and Mexican society in the Day of the Dead show two very different ways of dealing with our fear of our own mortality. In the Day of the Dead, they set a table. They go to the cemetery. They invite all of the ghosts to come across that thin membrane between death and life and visit them. We spend our time exorcising our ghosts or having them, our children, dress up as scary things and then buying off our fears with candy. We bribe them to go away instead of really setting a table for them so that we can deal in some real way with our own mortality. I think nothing illustrates the problem that our American society has more than the amount of money that we spend to deny the aging process. We spend more money on spackle in one form or another than any of our Home Depots. we have ourselves fixelated and pixelated and abraded and burned and peeled, and then the cracks are filled in with the fat that's been sucked, cut, and otherwise removed from other parts of our anatomies. So sometimes we actually, well, you fill in the metaphor, but we don't know our rear ends from our mouths sometimes because we've taken the fat from one area and given ourselves bee sting lips with the other. When my former congregant at Studio City, Walter Brooks, said to Dustin Hoffman, plastics, in The Graduate, we thought that he was recommending investing in plastics for the veneers, for the tables, for the chairs. We had no idea that it was going to be for noses and breasts. And that's where our society has gone. We are interested in denying the aging process, and the prime goal that so many Americans have is to have a beautiful corpse instead of to create a beautiful life. That if we look at terrorists who get the meaning to their lives through their deaths, we want to, you know, there was one bumper sticker years ago that said, "He who dies with the most toys wins." Well, there's capitalism really run amok. But he who leaves the most beautiful corpse is not much mentally, spiritually more advanced than the most toys. And it's a frightening societal phenomenon. Maureen Dowd, in her book, Are Men Necessary? She doesn't give an answer. It's a very Unitarian book. Lots of questions, lots of jokes, but no answers. Points out that there are people who have, women in this case, who have been so busy with the cutting and sectioning and spackling and the weapons of mass deception of Botox, which is itself a weapon of mass destruction and was actually found in Iraq. They did find Botox. But who knows what its purpose was. Certainly some form of deception, destruction, is another question. How is it that we have a society that cares about health on the outside and will take botulism in order to look good? Now, any of you who are, well, I can tell, the people who are frowning at me have not had Botox. The people who are looking at me with great equanimity, I'm highly suspicious of you at this point. But Maureen Dowd was talking about women who had fooled themselves. They were in their late 40s and came to the doctors and said, "I'm having trouble getting pregnant." And the doctor would say, "Well, how old are you?" And they go, I don't know, look at me, how old do you think I am?" That's not how the biological clock works. Now, the biological clock works on the inside, not on the outside. Now, I don't want to put any plastic surgeons out of business here. Take care of yourself, but don't confuse the appearance of youth with immortality. We still have to deal with the facts of aging, with the facts that we are mortal, and that tends not to make us terribly comfortable. God knows I understand that. We are a society filled with contradictions. We are probably objectively and actuarially among the safest, most protected people in the world. It is very unlikely that many of us will die from war or terrorism or a mad cow, an annoyed sheep, or a fluish chicken. What kind of world is it when you can't trust chicken soup? But actuarially, we are not very likely to succumb to this. We are more likely to succumb to not the mad cow, but the cholesterol in the cow. Not the guns, but the butter. There's very little relationship in our society between what frightens us and what is actually likely to take us out. And so we spend an awful lot of time not only dealing with the surface issues of skin and of body, but of the issues on the inside that we can't really have an awful lot to do with and to change. That our risks every day in the news. Every day on the news. 5 things in your refrigerator that can kill you. 12 things in your medicine cabinet that you don't know, but if you mix them together, the neighborhood is gone. We have all of these things, and it's driven by a soundtrack and music, and it's dangerous out there. There are people shot and kidnapped and robbed, and it's awful, and it's frightening, and of course it's awful. And of course it's frightening. But our fear and the music that drives part of that fear and the art and the production values that drive that fear have very little to do with how we lead our lives with each other. Do I live life unafraid and all man? God, no. I drive the freeways. There are people who cut me off and leave me quivering. I'm not eager to find out the ultimate answers and the ultimate concerns at the end of life. I'd like to stick around. And most of us would like to stick around, although when the sermon goes more than 15, 18 minutes, I see some people who are ready to check out voluntarily, so I try to keep it at under 18. I want to stick around. I am not unafraid, but I'm not afraid of being afraid. And that's really important. One of my hang-ups, actually literally, for a long time in my life was I was afraid of flying. I wouldn't get on an airplane. I didn't get on an airplane for over 20 years. And this came from the fact that I was pushed out of an airplane at 8,000 feet. I did have a parachute. I did have a parachute. And the reason that I was pushed out of an airplane at 8,000 feet is I didn't want to jump. And the reason that I was on the wing of the airplane holding on and somebody is saying to me, jump, was I was an idiot who would not admit that I was afraid before. I was dating a girl in high school whose mother owned a skydiving club. And she said, so you want to go skydiving? And I, of course, said,
oh, yes, you betcha. I'm all man and afraid of nothing.
In that deep, resonant voice that sounded actually more like Walter Denton. So I, like a fool, said, absolutely yes. Got up there, did not want to jump, got pushed out. You would be amazed at how difficult it is to look macho while you're losing your breakfast at 8,000 feet. The time that it took for that parachute to open, I could have read the works of Shakespeare several times and would have, except my heart had stopped. It was a very unnatural experience to be hanging there with somebody's laundry floating above me and coming down into Lake Elsinore. And so I really had a terrible phobia about flying. And part of the phobia was I didn't want to admit I was afraid. I could just say abstractly, I don't fly, I had a trauma. Nice psychological talk, I had a trauma. That explains that I don't have to go too deep. When Helene and I got married, she said to me in that way that she has, honey, I'm flying to Europe for our honeymoon. So I said, well, we need to talk about this. I'm really afraid of flying. She said, no, you're not. You're afraid of crashing. I said, okay, fair point, well taken. I'm afraid of falling, of burning, of crashing. Yes. And I said, so if I admit my fear, if I'm frightened in front of you, if I sit on the plane and squeeze your hand, will you think less of me? And she said, again, one of those things open for interpretation, honey, I couldn't think less of you. I decided not to take the cramped Alito Thomas approach to this, but a more expansive sense of that I was in there solid and she would still respect me. And the liberating experience of not having to whistle a happy tune. of not having to pretend that I'm not afraid was completely liberating and transformative. Welcoming in my anxieties and being able to share them liberated me not from the anxieties but from the fear of the fear. And an awful lot of the time we are dealing with meta problems. We are afraid of the problem instead of the problem itself. We're afraid of thinking something or feeling something. So we spend lots of time and lots of energy creating systems of denial of the things that are real for us instead of having the courage to be afraid. That's not a Zen koan. The courage to be afraid is something that is absolutely real and for me has personally been a liberating experience. There are lots of things that it's worth being afraid over. There are lots of things that are rational and a lot of things that are irrational. And I can accept both sides of myself. It was never helpful for me just to deal with the statistic that I was safer on the plane than driving to the airport. That's true, but it wasn't comforting if your fear is essentially neurotic. But hey, I'm essentially neurotic. One or two of you might be essentially neurotic. Neurosis, who gave a big... was that you? Oh, yeah, okay. Neurosis is a synonym for personality. We're not computers. We're not automatons. We have rational fears and irrational fears, and we begin by admitting who we are, what touches us, what makes us have a sense of fear, and at that point we have a choice to let it go. When I was a student in Vienna, living in the 2nd district by the Prater after having moved from the 18th district, Auf der Surfstrasse, I was studying with Viktor Frankl, who wrote the book of Death Camp to Existentialism and was the founder of the technique of paradoxical intent, which essentially says, don't put your energy into not thinking about the things that bother you. Invite them in like the ghosts at the Day of the Dead. If you're afraid, be afraid. Feel it. Let it fill you. Think about the things that you don't want to think about, whether it's aging, whether it's death, whether it's your children driving the car, whether it's the stock market bubble or any of the other bubbles and insecurities that are real in our lives. Instead of letting it haunt our dreams, make an appointment. Take it out for a date. Say, okay, I'm going to think about the things that bother me. I'm going to invite them in. And do you know what happens? You make a date with them, and it's hard to keep the date. It's hard to keep that 15 minutes of wallowing in all of the things that scare you the most. Death, dishonor, humiliation. There was a cartoon in the paper last week that said it's very nice knowing that you can't actually die of embarrassment. All of those things that people have their phobias, I know public speaking is one of them for many of you. Public listening is one of mine. But public speaking is not one. You know, you just go out there and accept that we're human and accept that rational things make us afraid, irrational things make us afraid. Invite them in, try to understand the difference that can help us in working through it, but whistling the happy tune, putting spackle on the things that scare us, trying to drug ourselves into not feeling pain, anxiety. That doesn't begin to address the problem. It only addresses the symptom and very often leads to other symptoms. Now, I'm not telling anybody to get off meds, but I am saying that it is not a reasonable expectation to not mind a world where there is injustice, to not mind a world where there is violence, to not mind a world where we and our children and our grandchildren are threatened. Feel anxious. Feel angry. Feel afraid and get through it for ourselves and engage it in the world. Fear is not the problem. Paralysis from fear, obsession from fear, those are pathologies. But fear is a way of getting our attention. Fear, like humor, is something that physically moves us. We get a frisson, a shake, a twitch, a tear, a sense of wanting to withdraw. Pay attention to it as you pay attention to laughter, because it means that something is competing for attention. Welcome it. And don't be, I know that Roosevelt said the only thing we have to fear is fear itself, but that's paralyzing fear. Fear is not to be feared. It's to be accepted and welcomed and worked through and used in order to motivate us to deal with the causes. We're in a society that wants to deal with symptoms and surfaces. We can go deep with honesty inside ourselves and use the fear that society puts before us.